Coming up on today's show...
If you fall in love with the journey, you'll never be disappointed because you're always just striving for, you know, to be the best version of yourself versus like something arbitrary like, oh, if I get this song cut or if I hit this number on this or whatever.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a singer-songwriter who just released a new single less than 2 weeks ago after having put out another in early February. His music has charted in over 50 countries on iTunes, and he earned a spot at number 13 on Sirius XM's The Pulse weekly countdown. His songs have spent 20 weeks in the top 40 on Billboard's Pop Airplay chart. He has also had major brand placements with the likes of Ralph Lauren, Busch Gardens, and DraftKings. His top five songs on Spotify alone have achieved a combined total of more than 2.1 million streams, and along the way, he saw a 112% boost in Shazams. He just performed at South by Southwest last month and has even been featured in People Magazine and Rolling Stone India. You've been hearing a song of his called Start of Something New. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Jay Putty.
Hello, hello. What an intro. Thank you so much for having me out.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for making time to talk with me today. Let's get started by having you share first about the song of yours that was just playing called Start of Something New, which is the single, Audience, that Jay just released on the 7th of February.
Yeah, really fun song that came about probably at the beginning of 2024. I feel like time's such a flat circle. I'd just gotten back from Christmas. I was writing with my best friend Michael and Kevin Gates, longtime collaborators of ours. And we were just kind of like looking at it of like, you know, it's a new year. Like holidays are over. For some people, like holidays can be so rough, whether it be, you know, not feeling the magic of whatever holiday you celebrate anymore because of family or like the passing of somebody, and just looking at the opportunity to start the new year with 365 new chances to be like a different person and just allowing yourself the grace to literally stumble and fall and like feel like, you know, it's the start of something new. I know that sounds like crazy. You know, not any association with a High School Musical, even though we are definitely all in this together.
What a cool concept. And for those in the audience who are not aspiring songwriters, not aspiring performers, Jay, the casual music listener, explain to them why a song that was written after Christmas of 23, beginning of 24, why it takes 13 months before that song gets released. Because I don't think people always understand music that they're hearing and when it gets released, when it was actually written, and what went on between the time it was written and the time it's released.
Yeah, so that's such a great question. Very nuanced as well. There's definitely been times with songs of mine that I have written them and like literally, you know, a month after it was written and done, it is out in the world.
Wow.
Just because like I get very excited about it. But it started something new. We had written that and like had gotten it done right around the time that my song On My Way had came out. And we had the Rosewood EP, and then we had the Compass EP that same year. And so I had like a slate of like 14 songs come out last year already. I'm constantly always like writing and recording, not only for myself, like I'm a songwriter and producer for like other artists. I've written for K-pop, tons of like brand and advertisement stuff. But the reason why it usually won't like come out right away is just because you want to have like a plan in place to like, you know, give it the best chance it can to like succeed. And like sometimes with the way that the release schedule has went, it just made a lot of sense to, you know, kind of wait that year and like release it in February of this year versus, you know, try and rush to release it last year.
Okay, at the same time, though, you write lots and lots and lots and lots of songs. You don't release them all. What was it about Start of Something New that when you wrote it, you knew, oh yeah, this one I'm releasing?
Another great one. Sometimes, like, I'm a very, when it comes to like my stuff as an artist, and stuff that resonates for me, I have a very like visceral gut reaction to how some songs hit me if I'm going to release them. And sometimes it's instantaneous. Like when we finished Started Something New, like we finished writing the chorus, and Michael and I looked at each other and we were like, yeah, this will be one of mine.
Wow.
But there are also songs that I write, and whether it be, you know, I'll use a great example of this song that is going to be on one of my records coming up this next year. And it was called If We Go Down. It's really great, like folk pop song, like very much in the vein of like that Miles Smith and Noah Kahan. And the day we wrote it, like I wasn't in a great headspace. I wasn't in a great mood. And so like my mind was like thinking about a million different other things at the time. So we finished the song, and like I remember we all like really liked the song, but I didn't have a super attachment to it because I wasn't in that headspace. Like I wasn't like fully present that day. And then fast forward like 3 or 4 months after we wrote that song, one of the co-writers, Jared Anderson, sent it to me and Michael. Again, I wrote it with Michael McQuaid, and I listened to it and I go, oh my God, like what is this song? Like who wrote this? And Jared goes, dude, we did. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot about this song. And I was like, how did I forget about this song? How have I not like paid attention to it? So like sometimes with the way that I am, because I am such a, I would say like impulsive sometimes, and like everything's like a gut reaction. Since I wasn't in the right headspace for that song at that time, I didn't know. Whereas like Started Something New, we were in my studio in East Nashville, and we both were just like, that's it. That's the song. Like we were ready for it.
Fascinating, fascinating. I love it. I love it. Let's switch over to a different song of yours. You mentioned it very quickly in everything you just said. At the start of last year, you put out a single called On My Way. Not only was there the 112% boost in Shazams that I mentioned in the intro, but that song hit number 13 on SiriusXM's The Pulse and outpaced Gwen Stefani and Shawn Mendes. Jay, how did that moment feel? And then also, what do you think has fueled your growing momentum?
Oh man, I want to say I'm really grateful because to be even the same breath of conversations like Gwen Stefani, who I grew up listening to in No Doubt, and Shawn Mendes, who I think is, I know everyone likes to look at him like he's a like a Vine superstar or something like that. What a great artist. So being in the same conversation or breath like that is truly, truly just a humbling moment. I think like what really fueled that song is I tell everybody that a lot of the songs that I write, it comes from a place of, you know, grief in a good way, because grief is just love persisting. And that song was a song I wrote with Maggie James and of course Michael McQuaid, who I'll probably name drop a million other times on this. We wrote it the 1st December after losing my dad and losing my friend Brendan, who you can't see it right now, but I got them tattooed on my forearm. So anytime I look at my arm, I got them right there. But I don't think the song was about me. It was about them, and it was for like people who have been experiencing grief and not really knowing how to navigate that. And also the sometimes like the guilt that you feel when like you are navigating that grief and you're like, all right, like I am not gonna like sit here and be sad today. I'm gonna like wake up and I'm gonna do things that remind me of the people I lost and like appreciate them, appreciate their memories. Where it's like there is some like guilt that comes with it, where it's like, oh, well, I'm moving on and they can't, and therefore, like if I take that time, like is that wrong of me? And that's a kind of what that song is about, is just like understanding that, you know, in the chaos of life, like you're always on this journey that you just don't understand. Like you're chasing a new chapter all the time, and who you are is not who you're gonna be.
I love that. I love that. I wonder though, as you started to see that song have the success that it did, you had all these other songs in the pipeline. You had just written a great song called Start of Something New that you felt wonderful about. What did you start to kind of conclude was responsible for all this momentum that you were seeing?
Relentless pursuit, I would say that. Because, you know, I know in the age of TikTok and social media that there's this idea that we have to have like the viral moment. We have to have the viral song, like the one thing. And I'm like, you know, that's not really how I grew up. And I think that our audience, like even on social media, they don't have a short attention span. They truly are craving substance, but they're craving substance that matters to them. They're craving community. That's why we're on social media. They're craving community. So I think what helped the momentum was, you know, when I say relentless pursuit, I was, you know, by the time that On My Way started really doing well at Hot AC Radio, which shout out to Bob Divney over at the Artist Co-op, who was my radio campaign manager, one of the most incredible people in the world. I had already released like 12 songs on the year already, with four of them being like in four different languages, just constantly, one, making content to try and like connect to people and like build community. But when they did discover who I was, they didn't go, oh, cool, I have this song, now what? It's like, oh no, they have, you know, 10 plus years of releases, because I've been releasing like that, but even 12 new songs on the year already. So it was just, they had something to come back to that didn't felt like I was just trying to play an algorithm, play a part. Like, I am a goofy dude. I don't know if I can cuss on here or not, so I won't. But I'm just, it's one of those things where it's like, you come back to my social media, you come back to the songs, and it's truly not about me. It's about them.
But, you know, in all that, there's something that I want to go back to. When I asked you how it felt, and you were talking about Gwen Stefani and Shawn Mendes, you talked about humility. And I think that is worth going back to, because a lot of people would say, how did I feel? I felt excited. What do you mean? Darn right. You know, I belong there. It's about time. I'm really talented and I've worked hard, and, you know, it felt great to be where I should be, where my music belongs. And so I think there's something to be said. I think your humility has fed into exactly what you just described in terms of wanting to give people substance and not just creating for the sake of creating.
I really appreciate that. Don't get me wrong, especially in my youth, like I just turned 31 this year. And in my youth, I definitely had that chip on my shoulder, that arrogance that like, oh, I deserve to be here, why not me? And, you know, I would say like life and like experiences really showed me that there are a lot of really dang good musicians out there that people are still discovering to this day. It's a big reason why I love TikTok, is there are some songs that people release that get popular and you're like, dang, this song is like 4, 5, 6. Or like, I'll use the example of Miguel, That Sure Thing. That song was released in 2011 and it became its most popular last year. Like, I definitely had that back in the day, but I think, again, like, it just comes down to like, I'm just grateful to be here, man.
Awesome. So speaking of back in the day, and by the way, there will certainly be folks who come to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they are fans, they are followers of yours, Jay. And to those people, I say hello, welcome, thank you for making time to listen, and I do hope that you'll check out other episodes of the podcast. But Jay, over my more than 11 years of doing this show, I have been fortunate to get listeners from 166 countries around the world, which means that there are going to be people hearing our interview that are just getting introduced to you for the first time. I said that you're calling in from Nashville, but you're not originally from there. Share with the audience not only where you're from originally, but about making the leap to Music City and how being in Nashville has shaped your artistry for that matter.
Oh, man, such a... I hope I don't get long-winded. I've known to make a short story long before. So I'm originally from Evansville, Indiana, which is one of the most southernmost cities in, like, if you've ever seen the tip of Indiana, it's basically where it is. And I spent most of my life growing up, ironically, I started in like emo and like metal bands. What happened was I got into playing guitar because during the summer of like when I was 11, I had a run-in with a bully that ended up being really, really bad. I won't like get into that, but basically I had to have a few surgeries, and yikes. Because of that, I ended up getting a guitar and learning that. And because I was so angsty, I started in those metal bands. I was very lucky that I got to start at like the height of the MySpace era, right? Like the local shows were great. Like everybody, like there are so many bands and all that that I got to play with growing up that are mind-blowing. Like, I played with Jelly Roll when he was still just a rapper. I opened for Teddy Swims when he was the metal vocalist of a band from Atlanta, Georgia.
Whoa.
The country singer Russell Dickerson used to be the vocalist of a band called A Plea for Purging, which was a hardcore band. So, like, I gotta, like, really do some fun stuff. And throughout high school, I realized that, like, you know, the further away I got from the angst that I had, the softer the music writing I got, and I realized that I had a real passion for, like, writing songs in general. So I went from, like, metal to pop punk bands. That pop punk band led to a pop rock band called The Nightlife that did really well. Like, we did Warped Tour and we got good buzz. And probably, like, when I was like 18, turning 19, that band and me parted ways and I started writing songs solo in, like, the pop format. I toured shows with the late Aaron Carter and Austin Mahone.
Wow.
And when I was playing a show in Indianapolis, there was a manager there that was like, "Hey, I really love your songs, but I don't think they're pop songs. Like, it sounds like you write country. Like, have you ever thought about, like, writing country music for somebody?" And I was like, no, not really. I grew up in Southern Indiana. My dad was a redneck. And so I was like, I'll give anything a chance. So I went to Nashville for, like, a week to, like, write some country songs. And the job I was working at the time offered me a transfer down there.
Whoa.
I basically was like, okay, like, I'll do that. And I started writing country. And from there, I was like, oh, I really don't like writing country, but I was already in Nashville. And I got hit up by a dude, like, randomly on Facebook, if anyone still has that. And he was like, "Oh, Jay, I absolutely love your songs." He's like, "Have you ever thought about writing K-pop before?" And I'm like, "Oh, you mean, like, anime intros?" Because I was, like, unfamiliar at the time. This is, like, 2017. And he's like, "No, look, K-pop, like the boy bands." I'm like, "No, but I would love to try."
Wow.
And I, you know, started writing with some producers and all that around here. And ironically, the singer of my first emo band from when I was 13, him and I and the guitarist of that band wrote my first K-pop song that ended up being on a number one record in Korea.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh my God, amazing. Wow. And so I was writing K-pop all the time, had a couple other cuts with some groups, but then the pandemic happened and no one was really cutting, like, pop songs like that because, you know, you need a tour to do it. So I switched to writing and producing for film and television with a lot of other artists. That was when I started getting songs in, like, Ralph Lauren commercials and Claro, the phone provider, and a million other things. And I was like, you know, I really look at, like, artistry as, like, super sacred. So I was like, oh, like, I can just do this. I can write with other artists that are, like, killing it right now. I'd rather do that. I didn't feel like I had anything really, like, important to say. You know, fast forward to 2023 when I lost my dad and my friend and then my grandma and then Ernesto Sr., I was like, oh, I have a lot of stuff to say now. So yeah. I would say, like, digital really, like, shaped me because it allowed me to just create pretty unabashedly. If I feel like I have to write something, like, super, super, like, too commercial, I feel like I get bored. That's why I was like, oh, K-pop was really fun.
But, you know, I want to jump in here because there's a recurring theme that I keep hearing that's a great teaching moment for anyone in the audience who is an up-and-coming songwriter or performer. For openers, you had played sports back in Indiana, correct?
Yes.
So at some point you walked away from that, and audience, I want you to hear all these great lessons from Jay that he played sports and eventually decided, okay, I'm willing to make a change. Music is obviously the thing. Someone sees him and says, "Have you ever considered writing country music?" He says, "No, I really haven't, but I'll try it." And then someone says, "Have you ever written K-pop?" "I haven't, but I'll try it." So this idea of these opportunities, you have to be willing to step out of your comfort zone. You have to be willing to say yes to things that might not be in your lane. It might not be where your comfort zone is, but look at all the doors that it is open for Jay. And I want to continue his story, but first, let me give you this. This episode is being released as I am in Chicago. It's actually at a time when I will have already been here for a few days attending Podcast Movement Evolutions and actually leaving town the day after this releases, heading next to what I always call the real city that never sleeps as I head west to go speak at the Las Vegas Writers Conference. Plus, when that is over, I will be attending the NAB show, which is the National Association of Broadcasters, and their massive conference and expo at the Las Vegas Convention Center. If you or someone you know are or will be in Vegas, contact me through the website or DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account so we can make plans to meet. I am always anxious to meet people face-to-face to say a personal thank you for listening to this podcast. And stay tuned to Now Hear This Entertainment, the weekly e-newsletter, and the Instagram account, because I will be announcing more upcoming dates and places where I will be out on the road that hopefully we can connect in person. Jay, you were telling us about moving from Indiana to Nashville. Your story, as you have hinted a couple times, also includes some real personal tragedies, one being a house fire and another being the passing of your father, among others, as we've started to hear. Audience, this is someone who I want you to draw inspiration from. There's a real teaching moment here for a testimony to resiliency. Jay, what has kept you going through the toughest times, and how have those experiences maybe influenced your songwriting?
Too dumb to quit. I feel like that really has come down to it, honestly. Like, through all of these tragedies, which I'm not really one to like harp on it, but like, my songwriting has been a way for me to process it, because sometimes I don't feel like, I feel like I internalize things a lot, and when bad things happen, I don't take care of myself, and so like, my songs are a way for me to do just that. It always starts as, you know, therapy for me, and then I understand that afterwards, once you like write or release a song, it's no longer yours. So like, the only thing that I look for is it kind of like a lighthouse to people who have been experiencing it, because I feel like I laugh it off all the time. I remember I was talking to my publishing coordinator at a writing camp that we had at the beginning of January, and it was the first time her and I really got to like get down and like talk about it, and I shared some of this stuff, and she stopped me and she goes, "Oh my God, are you okay?" And I'm like, we just laughed through the pain. And it's not because like I'm, you know, sitting there trying to discredit what it is or whatever. It's just, you know, when it comes to like resiliency, I don't think I'm that resilient. I'm finding ways to process and take it a day at a time. I'm definitely not perfect at it. I don't know if anyone really is, but I just try and find like the joy in like different parts of life as I go about it.
Well, I would argue that you are in a better position as a songwriter than those who are not, in that you have experienced so much tragedy that a lot of people would say, this is too much, I give up, I'm done. And what? You quit your job at the bank, you quit your job at the insurance office, and then what? Whereas with you, you've been doing this for so long, and it's a good outlet, as you just mentioned. I loved the lighthouse reference that you made, because as soon as you said that, a picture went in my head of, aha, this is a place, it's a beacon where everyone can go to. So whether it's Jay Putty that's in Nashville, whether it's a listener that's in New Mexico, whether it's a listener that's in Spain, everybody, let's all meet at that song and let's bond through the emotion, the pain, the suffering, the healing, whatever it is, through that song. I love that analogy.
Man, I appreciate that. Yeah, like, the only thing I want to do, I know that like Rick Rubin has famously said, like, the audience comes last. And so like, I always do try and write like the songs in a way to like help make sense of like whatever's in my head, but like, I don't think the audience, you know, doesn't come at all. Like, I think being able to give it back to them is always the most important thing.
Well, my hat's off to you, because to me, a house fire and the passing of your father would be enough. And then the fact that you mentioned other people that you've lost. And yes, it's like you say, sometimes you laugh it off. So easier said than done. But the fact that you are here persevering and continuing to write these songs, my hat is off. My heart goes out to you. That's a whole lot that someone who's 31 should not have to deal with if they were 81.
I mean, it's kind of a crazy time, because like, the losses happened like within about an 8-month span for me, 2022. So, I kind of figured that like, after that year, there isn't anything else that can hurt me at this point. And so like, I was able to make it through with like a lot of great friends and a lot of great support that, you know, at this point, You're gonna have to like actually kill me to kill me, if that makes sense.
Audience, speaking of surviving, go back and listen to episode 479 of this podcast. I will put a link to it on the show page for Jay's episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. The guest was Sean Giovanni, who also moved to Nashville, and I don't want to do a spoiler, so let me just tease it by saying that he came back to his apartment there in Music City after not being in town long at all, and what he came home to easily could have sent him packing, moving back home. But like you're hearing with Jay, Gio rallied and his story provides good inspiration too. I'm also going to put a link to episode 564, Ryan Robinette. Similar story to Jay's. He has lost an immediate member of his family. He's from a small town, albeit in Ohio. He also played sports, eventually made the move to Nashville. So look for those two links and check out those two episodes. Jay, let's lighten things up a bit. In the intro, I mentioned that you just performed a few weeks ago at South by Southwest. Was that your first time doing so? How was the event? Tell us all about your time there in Austin.
Man, yeah, that was my very first time ever playing South by Southwest, and like what a time. loved it. My band and I were only there for I think about like 72-ish hours, and so it was great time. I actually just got back the live recording that we're going to do. Spoiler, we're going to release a live EP from one of the sets that we did there. And man, it was just art and culture and people and open bars, so too many tequila sodas. I was having a blast, and it was a great time being able to hang out with not only like great musicians that we played like the same stage, but to get to watch some of these like really incredible musicians too.
On a related note, if I was accurate in my research, I think you played at the famous Bluebird Cafe there in Nashville last November. Am I correct? And if so, I want to ask you about your most memorable live performances, and I'm thinking that maybe that one would rank right up there.
Yeah, what an honor for that, just because I always feel as a songwriter in Nashville to get asked to play is a recognition of like your songwriting ability, like not in like a status or a standard kind of way. It's just like Nashville saying, hey, like we want to ask you, like I didn't play the open mic, I got to actually do like, you know, Bluebird in the round. And so like that felt like the recognition that, hey, like you are a pretty dang good songwriter, and definitely top five just because of like how much it kind of like validated like what I did. I would say like Warped Tour when I was a kid, just because, you know, being able to do that was great. Like there's just so many like performances that each one are special, because I could say South By, but is that just recency bias? Or again, like all these great shows and opportunities that I've been able to do, I think just being able to, you know, share a stage and do that in itself, if you ask me tomorrow, my top five would probably be different as well.
I love it. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by singer-songwriter Jay Putty. Visit his official website at thisisjayputty.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. At the start of the show, I was talking over it, and we did not play the whole thing, but you heard Jay talking about his single, Start of Something New, which just came out on the 7th of February, Lucky 7. Go get it, and more of his original music from the likes of, wow, seemingly everywhere, the iTunes Store, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, YouTube Music, Apple Music, and even SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this show is available on. Social media-wise, connect with Jay on Facebook, X, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. I want to take a moment to explain why you should be subscribed to the weekly e-newsletter and or be following on the at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account. Earlier, you heard me talking about currently being in Chicago and heading next to Las Vegas. What you don't know from any recent episode of the podcast is that I actually spent parts of 6 days in Nashville before coming to Chicago. I was there March 25 to March 30. It's something that came up at a time and in such a way that interviews had already been recorded, and I was not going to go back in and drop in new audio just to add in the fact that I was also going to Music City. Plus, I knew that I'd be able to spread the word through those other two channels. So as much as I do my best to try to keep you up to date on the podcast, that's a good example of some content that you get through the e-newsletter and Instagram that you could possibly only get through those two methods. Sign up for the e-newsletter on the website, nhte.net. It only comes out once a week when a new episode of the show gets released. And while you're on the website, scroll all the way down to the bottom where the social media icons are and click to link over to Instagram and give me, the show, a follow. Jay, at the start of that, and at the start of the show for that matter, I introduced you as a singer-songwriter. I have two questions, though. First is, I had read in your website that you, quote, picked up a guitar because of sports injuries, end quote. So should I be saying singer, songwriter, guitar player, or no? And then secondly, on a similar note, on your Instagram it says folk pop, yet iTunes lists singer, songwriter as the genre for your music. Plus, when I first was contacted about possibly interviewing you, it said indie pop artist Jay Putty. So set the record straight on whether you play guitar or not, as well as what you would label your style of music as.
Yeah, so folk pop definitely is like the genre, sadly, on iTunes and all that. It does not like have it, so you, like singer-songwriter is the closest one. Mm. I am a guitar player, first love. I play actually quite a few different instruments. Hmm. As a producer and all that, I've tried as hard as I can to learn as much as possible. So like, I would definitely say guitar player is for sure.
Okay. So having heard all that, tell us about balancing heartfelt storytelling with chart-worthy pop hooks. How do you find that balance between writing music that's deeply personal that you alluded to earlier, but also writing music that's undeniably catchy?
That's such a good question. So I think if you start from the foundation of like writing like truly from an authentic place, and like whether it's for me or for another artist, and you're truly doing something that like matters to you and like it's coming from that artistic place, then dressing it up to make it a little more palatable to an audience isn't sacrificing anything that you wouldn't do anyway. Think about it like a filet mignon, where it's like, well, a filet mignon, like before you actually like trim out all the other excess parts of the meat, like it's fatty, it has all these different things, but like you start from like that place and then you whittle it down. So I think as long as you're really coming at it as a like really authentic place, like the balance is always going to be there, because how can someone be like, oh, well, this song is, you know, not very authentic, or it's too commercial. It's like, well, what is commercial? Like, what is pop? Pop music just means popular. Like, if you tell me that, like, oh, it's, you know, coworker music or like whatever, I'm just like, that's fine. Like, it's just not for you. And that's okay. Like, I'm not meant to be for everyone. And I don't think any artist is meant to be for everyone. I think just doing what you love and like really letting it resonate with the people who it's meant to, you'll always find a home.
See, you and I are on the same wavelength, because as you were giving that answer, the word that popped into my head was authentic. And I think that if you start from a place of authenticity and you write what you're feeling, now you have expressed something that is deeply personal to you, but then you sprinkle the songwriter dust on it and you say, okay, now that I've got my message, now how can I put it into a form that's catchy?
Yeah. And like, catchy is like sometimes subjective too. Like if you think about all like the songs and the hooks that you're like, wow, like I think of like the, what is it, Tom's Diner, that whatever that was, like that's literally just in the track. Like it's not even like the catchiest part. It's not even like the main part of the song, but it's like, it's catchy.
Yeah, I like that. That's a great example. In the intro, I mentioned the great numbers that you're getting on Spotify. How does it feel to know your music is resonating with so many people? But then also, what has been the most meaningful fan interaction that you've had?
Great question. It feels validating, like for lack of better words, to have people like really resonate, and you know, the numbers come along with it. Like I'm not like a number chaser guy. I used to, I'll be honest. Like I used to chart watch and this, that, or the other thing. So it definitely, you know, it feels good to see it. But I think like one of the best like fan interactions I got is I had a song called it's called War Paint, and I released it probably, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And someone got it tattooed on them, which is the lyrics
Whoa.
of the chorus are like, "You should know you're beautiful without your war paint."
Wow. That's, yeah, wow. Talk about making an impact on somebody. But I want to back up. I like that you said, I'm not a numbers guy. I used to be. I used to look at the charts. So this is a potential teaching moment. What happened that made you say, I don't need to be doing that anymore?
I made myself sick to my stomach, always constantly doing that. Just
Whoa.
because, like, again, like when you're chasing vanity numbers, which is kind of like what I say, like when you're only like looking at charts and streams and all that, instead of like how it actually impacts the audience that you're connecting with, you're chasing things that literally go away the next week, right? Like we see all the time with people charting on Billboard and all that. It's like, all right, cool. Like they charted for like 2 weeks and now it's off Billboard and now it's like, the milestones never feel as good as what you think they do. It's the journey that really matters. And if you can fall in love with like the journey and the process, and that's like for anything in life, like kind of like working out or anything like that, is just, if you fall in love with the journey, you'll never be disappointed because you're always just striving for, to be the best version of yourself versus like something arbitrary, like, oh, if I get this song cut or if I hit this number on this or whatever.
But help me through that a little bit further because, for instance, I mentioned earlier that your song On My Way hit number 13 on SiriusXM's The Pulse. So I would think, and I'm putting this in the form of a question, I would think that when someone has a song chart like that, that you put all kinds of pressure on yourself and you say, okay, so my next song has got to be number 13 again, or number 12, or number 11, or number 10. Otherwise, I'm going to tell myself that I failed. So if I'm right on that, just help us through that. What can be done? Like you said, you cannot pay attention to the charts, but let's face it, people are going to let you know, hey, you're at number 13.
That's a really good question. I would say I had like a lesson the year before because the first single I released as an artist again after like a 4 or 5 year hiatus, The Best Days Are Yet to Come, did well at alternative radio. And I think hit about like 32 at alternative radio here in the States. And I put that pressure on myself of like, all right, I have to follow it up. I have to do this. I have to do that. And, On My Way didn't just come out of the gate and do that. Like, On My Way came out in January and we went to radio at in July. And so there was like 6, 7, 8 months of not being at radio and trying to have that conversation with myself of like, why does that matter? Like, why am I putting that pressure on myself? Like, why am I killing myself at the idea that like I don't hit this when it's like I did something that like a lot of artists for the first time in their life would love to do. Like, why am I not just like grateful? And what really helped was just trying to come at it as like a, I don't deserve or like I'm not owed, any of this success, and that like anything that comes with it is just incredibly grateful.
Yeah, because if you think back to the fan with the tattoo, someone tattooed something from your music on their arm for Pete's sake, and the chart position has already come and gone, and that's permanent now. So to make somebody feel something is going to be a lot more lasting than, did I tell you that 2.5 years ago I had a song that charted, And the part about others would love to be there, I love that you said that because I've had people come on the show and talk about coming out of the gate with a debut album that hit like number two. You talk about putting pressure on yourself. Well, guess what? If your next album is at number 11, there's loads of artists that would say, oh my gosh, I would love to get to 11. Heck, I'd love to get 21 or 31. So I love the perspective because you're right. You can spend way too much time getting caught up in putting all this unnecessary pressure on yourself and missing out on some joy because we charted at number 11. Like, okay, it wasn't number two, but we charted at number 11, and you celebrate that instead of saying, what if, or I missed my target.
Exactly. Like, I don't expect to have a career year every single year. That would just be crazy. I'm an independent artist, no label or anything like that. And so, like, the fact that I even get to do that is a huge W.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of baseball players and how they get paid to, quote unquote, only be successful one out of every three or four times to the plate. that's not bad. So you can't expect to have a career year every year that you release something. I like you having said that. You talked a few times here and there about a little bit of live performing, but let's have a little fun because I know you've certainly done your fair share of it. Any wild or unexpected stories from the road over the years?
Oh, man. Yes. one of the first ones that comes to mind is one time I was playing in Indianapolis, Indiana, and we were loading out in the back of the venue, and we straight up had a crackhead come up to us and like offer us a needle. And it was just like, hey, like, y'all want a party? And I was like, no. And he goes, that's fine with you. More crack from me. Walked away. Never saw him again. I think about him all the time.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not much of a partier though. So like a lot of my stories are not like, I'm one of those people that like, you know, I'll have a couple drinks every once in a while, but like, I'm not going to go out and like stay up till 3 a.m. That sounds exhausting. Like, I'm a bed by 9 kind of guy. So
stay up party until 3 a.m, come home and continue drinking from the friendly confines of your couch. That's not you.
No, absolutely not.
So you mentioned once or twice that you do produce. If there's someone listening right now who says, I like this guy, I like what he does, I like who he seems to be, I wonder if he would be interested in producing me, can they go on your website and contact you through there? Or is it, no, Bruce, I don't do that much producing. It's just kind of for people I know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They can reach out to me. I'm always down to like work with like new songwriters or new artists and all that to see like what we can do.
But see, now you're saying songwriters from a production standpoint, or is someone going to contact you about doing a co-write and you're going to go, whoa, slow down. That's not what I meant.
Absolutely. It's what I meant too.
Wow. Wow.
There was always someone who gave me a chance when, like, I tell people all the time that like a lot, like with what I have done and like what I've done as a songwriter, all it is like kind of like having a piece of paper that tells me I did it. It doesn't make me like signing a publishing deal doesn't make me a better songwriter by default. It's like, no, I just have like a title now that says like, I know what I'm doing in a sense. It doesn't make anybody else with or without a publishing deal like any less or like better as a songwriter. So like, I'm always down because someone always gave me a chance.
Mm, I love it. So set the record straight. You do have a pub deal, because I was looking at your Instagram and I saw a post that I started to tell myself, oh, he must have a publishing deal. And then by the time I got through reading what was in that post, I said, oh, no, this isn't him. This is someone else that invited him into a write.
Yeah, so I have recently signed a publishing deal, and I get to make the announcement at the end of April. So I can talk about it a little bit. It's something that happened at the beginning of January, but like the official announcement gets to come out at the end of April. Big love to Madison, Cooper, and Terry. I know you're listening, and you guys are the best.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for the exclusive. So on that note, what is coming up for you? Are there any upcoming projects, collaborations, or even tour plans that fans should be excited about?
Definitely in the works for more shows. So started something new in Call of the Wild. Are going to be leading into the Mountains and Valleys EP that is also going to be due in April. There's a short film I filmed and scored myself to go along with it. And I already have like the next two EPs that are coming out this year ready to go too. So it's just going to be constant music and constant, you know, hanging out and doing what I can.
And when you say the next two EPs, is one of those the material that was recorded at South by Southwest?
No, that is full new songs too. The South by Southwest EP, I guess that counts too, but like that will... I'm thinking of like more of like the original music coming out.
Wow. Amazing. Oh, such good stuff. We are going to close today with another one of Jay's original songs, one titled Call of the Wild, which just came out less than 2 weeks ago on March 21st, to be exact. Before I let you go and we play that track, Jay, share with the audience all about this one, if you would, please.
I love this song. It's so much fun to play live. It is what I call the Finding Your Tribe song. It is all about just finding the people that you just want to like be around, who embrace your weird, who don't think your weird is weird. It is about like the people in my life that have made me very happy to be who I am in all like my, you know, nooks and crannies and flaws. And it's just that, and I get a straight up howl in it. And, you know, That's always fun.
So two follow-up questions. Who did you write the song with? And then now that we know that you do play guitar and other instruments for that matter, are you playing guitar in this song? Do you normally play guitar on the songs that you release?
Yeah. So I wrote this with my buddy Tim Ream and Kevin Gates. Kevin Gates, longtime collaborator of mine, and Tim Ream, incredibly talented songwriter here in Nashville as well. And yeah, I play guitar on everything. I play most of the piano. I arrange most of like the orchestrations. So like when I say like I scored the short film. So like any you know how like Hans Zimmer scores movies and all that. I scored this short film, so that way it, you know, felt like very cinematic and like a movie. So yeah, I have my hands in the pot like pretty heavily with most of my music.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I love it. Jay, congratulations on the new single. So much more that we're going to see from you, it sounds like, in 2025. Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. This was a blast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me out and making the time for me today.
You bet. You bet. And folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer, Jay Putty. Do visit his official website at thisisjputty.com. As I mentioned before, I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You are about to hear his brand new single. Plus, at the start of the show, we played some of the song that he released in February. Both songs and more of his original music. Get it all from the likes of the iTunes Store, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, YouTube Music, Apple Music, and even SoundCloud, which, as I mentioned before, is one of the platforms that this show is available on. Social media. This morning, I followed Jay on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. We did not get to talk about his official YouTube channel, which has well over 5,000 subscribers. Do go there and check out the videos that he has posted. For that matter, tell Jay you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you are still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen week after week, year after year, 11 years with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It is simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 581. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Jay Putty. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Call of the Wild.